This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
Some time ago, I wrote a paper that started a controversy that has lasted until the present day.
That's physicist Stephen Hawking talking about his newly revised theory on black holes. What did Hawking say that has caused such a controversy in physics? And is Hawking, you know, if Hawking is a bit unsure about stuff, what does that say about the rest of physics? Fortunately, we've assembled a stellar cast of cosmologists to help discuss, is there a crisis in physics? Have we reached the scientific limits of our knowledge? Do we need to revise the fundamentals of physics? That's what we're going to be talking about. If you'd like to join us, our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SciTalk. You can also tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. And if you go to our website at sciencefriday.com, you can also join a discussion there. Let me introduce my guests. Dr. Frank Wilczek is a winner of the 2004 Nobel Prize in Physics. He's also a professor of physics at MIT. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
Hi there. Dr. Brian Schmidt is a winner of the 2011 Nobel Prize in Physics and a professor at the Australian National University in Canberra, Australia. Welcome to Science Friday.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Dr. Lawrence Krauss is Foundation Professor and Director of the Origins Project at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. Welcome back, Lawrence.
It's always nice to be back, Ira.
They are all joining us from KJZZ in Tempe, and they'll be speaking at the Origins Projects panel tomorrow night at Arizona State University. You might want to get over there and join the discussion. Let me begin with you, Lawrence. Let's talk about what did Stephen Hawking mean when he said, what was the revision? Can you, in lay language, tell us what was going on there?
Well, it's hard to know what Stephen means lately. I think he meant that he's been rethinking what he did earlier, which was quite important in the way physicists have thought about quantum mechanics and gravity, was to point out there's a potential logical contradiction. The fact was that material falls into a black hole, it loses its identity, and all the information is lost. And quantum mechanics says that's not supposed to happen. So, because apparently there's a conflict, therefore, between gravity and quantum mechanics, and it's spurred a lot of work over the last 40 years and has been very important. And I don't think we've still completely resolved that particular issue. But that's actually the kind of crisis we like in physics, because it's paradoxes. It's problems that lead us to discover new things. Stephen, over the last while, has rethought that idea several times, and it's really premature, I think, to talk about. I know that whenever he makes a statement or writes a paper, there's a great deal of attention in the press and the media, but I think this is still an open question, and it needs a lot more work.
Brian, would you agree with that?
So it's not exactly the type of thing I normally do. I like looking at things like black holes. It turns out that turns out to be problematic. They don't have not much to see. So, you know, from my perspective, it's trying to look at the type of work that the theorists do, mm-hmm. and trying to translate it into things that we can go out and observe with telescopes or with other instruments to understand the universe. And so certainly from that side, it's premature because we don't have anything to test yet.
Nothing that you as an experimentalist can try to figure out. That all these theoretical physicists making predictions and you can't test them out.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
details. Frank, what do you think?
I think the kind thing is to pass over this in silence.
you mean you could be very critical, but you won't?
Exactly.
Well, I can't let you get away with that. Yeah, what do you mean? What do you mean by that?
This controversy about the nature of black holes has been going on for 40 years and has inspired a lot of work, but it's still, even in its most basic aspects, not very well understood. And so I think it's... Mm-hmm. It hasn't proved to be an extremely fruitful line of investigation, and it's still confusing people. Mm-hmm. And this latest contribution is not uh, hasn't has certainly not dispelled the clouds.
So the great issue still remains, I think, Lawrence, you pointed out, the reconciling quantum mechanics and general relativity.
It's certainly one of the key. If you look at the frontiers of the things we don't understand, that's something that clearly we don't understand. It's always nice to know, in some sense, what you don't understand. In fact, there's a lot we don't understand, and you can view that as I say, as a crisis or an opportunity. The key point is, as a theorist, I'm the first one to say, I think, that we need experiment to drive us. We theorists can come up with a lot of ideas, but we need the reins of experiment, because not just to rein in and rule out a lot of ideas, but what experiment does is often surprise us and force us to think in new directions. And I think that's where the real value of experiment. And part of the problems, if you wish, that have occurred in some areas of physics, including particle physics, is we've been waiting a long time for new data to surprise us, and we're very excited by the Large Hadron Collider, and we're hoping it will surprise us soon.
Well, did the discoveries that it's making, has it surprised you? Has it opened up newer questions or answered older ones?
Well, it's
both.
It's both.
It was an enormous triumph for what's called the Standard Model, our fundamental theory of the basic interactions, both to find this final ingredient that we've been working with
the Higgs boson,
as part of our theory for many years, right, the Higgs boson, but also the way in which it was found. The Higgs boson as a phenomenon is very unimpressive. It shows up in 1 in a trillion events at the LHC, and even when it does show up, it's highly unstable, so what you actually see is not a dramatic thing, but a few particles among many that you can trace back to this Higgs boson. So to be able to see something like that in a convincing way, you have to understand everything else exceedingly well. And the big story to me of the LHC has been its astonishing confirmation of the Standard Model and our ability to use it. Then the Higgs, and because that theoretical basis is so firm, it allows us to formulate really ambitious questions about the next step and ideas about unification, the possibility of supersymmetry, possibly ways of getting at what the dark matter is. All these things are opened up by having that firm basis.
But at the same time, we're waiting. What we'd really like to do is have it tell us which direction is right. I think Frank's right that the big surprise is two big surprises. One, it worked because it's the most complex machine ever made. And two, I think, to somewhat as a theorist, I don't know if Frank agrees with me, one of the surprises, I think many people thought they'd see other things before they saw the Higgs, that it was easier to see some things like supersymmetry, new particles. The Higgs is a really hard thing. And what's amazing is that they've seen the Higgs first and so far nothing else. And we're waiting with bated breath when it turns on again to see if which of the many ideas we have are wrong, and perhaps all of them are, and which directions we need to work in.
It's actually been broadly in line with what I expected. The Higgs particle at the mass it was quite a challenge, as I hope I emphasized, to find. But it was a very well-defined challenge, and the experimentalists are very, very capable of rising to those kinds of challenges.
Mm-hmm. But
furthermore, in the more plausible versions of supersymmetry, which I favor, which enable unified field theories, it was likely, based on previous experience and experiments, that the truly supersymmetric partners, the ones that are outside the Standard Model, would be quite heavy. So I'm very optimistic that they'll show up in the higher energy version of the LHC, but I was never very sanguine about them showing up in the first round.
As an experimentalist,
yes.
I mean, one of the things that's been interesting about the whole Higgs discovery has been just how right the theory has been. Mm-hmm. And we as experimentalists, we want the theorists to be a bit right, but we rely on them being a bit wrong.
Yes.
And that really hasn't eventuated yet in this case. And that's one of the great frustrations, is that it's all sort of been exactly out of the playbook, and we were hoping for it not to be.
Brian, as someone who won the Nobel Prize for work with dark energy, Are there any experiments, as an experiment, that they'll tell us what it is?
At this point, I think that we have one hope, which is that we're going to continue to study how dark energy accelerates the universe, and that acceleration will be different than the vanilla idea that Einstein had, which is being some sort of energy that uniformly fills space in time. That is our hope, but I'm not very optimistic.
I bet you it isn't going to be that way. But I think, in fact, the discovery that Brian made is a perfect example of surprising people. It surprised us. All theorists, yes. Most theorists in advance would have said, gee, there shouldn't be this energy in empty space. But I do worry, now we have this picture of the universe, I do worry a little bit on my bad nights that what sort of was the situation in particle physics for the last 30 years, which is this beautiful model, one of the greatest intellectual edifices humans ever created, that agreed with all the data, but we really didn't understand why the model at a fundamental level had the properties it has. Now we've got a universe that has dark energy and dark matter, and everything fits, but I'm a little worried that we'll find that there may not be observables in cosmology over the next few years that we'll find something that disagrees with that picture, or at least tells us where to look next. So there could be a looming crisis in that sense in cosmology. Well, I don't know if Brian agrees with me.
I think the penguins have a crisis. We have crisitunities. I think the dark matter, I think, is ripe for discovery. I would be very disappointed if within 5 to 10 years we don't have a much clearer picture of what it is. Now we know how it gravitates, but basically not much else. But it's got to be, it's almost certainly some kind of particle that will have a name and a face and interactions, and there will be a wonderful era of discovery as we figure out what that is. And once we do, it'll open up a whole new window into the universe.
There are different ideas. People have different ideas about what the universe, how many universes there are, multiverses and things.
Yes.
Is it possible that the laws of physics are not uniform throughout the entire universe?
It's very possible. But some of them are more uniform than others, and some principles are universal. It's probably, for instance, the principle of equivalence and general relativity is likely to be a feature of all parts of the universe that deserve the name. The laws of quantum mechanics probably are in some form. And the gauge theories, they may be different. They may be four colors instead of three in the strong interactions and so forth. But the basic principles, the deep principles we've learned, I think probably are universal.
But at the same time, I think it's important to point out that what we've realized with our success, in some sense the embarrassment of riches, of the beautiful models that Frank and others have helped us develop, is that we've kind of realized now that we're stuck, or most of us are stuck, because we only have one universe. Most of us live in one universe. I won't talk about the others. But and therefore, sometimes, let's say there are more than one, there is more than one universe, and let's say at some level the laws of physics are probabilistic, so that different universes have different properties with some probability distribution. Well, it's like being a doctor and trying to do an epidemiological study with one patient. When you see something, you don't know if it's significant. So there could be fundamental things that we might measure, and we say that's very strange. It doesn't seem to agree with what we might think, but maybe it's just an accident, and maybe we're unlucky. The universe we live in is at the edge. And the big question, of course, is will we be able to resolve that issue? And I think it's important to
it means the art of theoretical physics will change.
Let me remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI. I'm just letting, in case people just are tuning in and their hair is beginning to hurt, we're talking with Frank Wilczek, Brian Schmidt, and Lawrence Krauss about crises, possible things we still don't know about the universe. Lawrence, you said there are a lot of things we don't know about the universe.
There are probably a lot more we don't know than we do know.
We don't know them.
I mean, that's why it's still worth. That's why science is still interesting. I mean, I often say that if you're a theorist anyway, the best states to be in are either wrong or confused, because there's a lot to learn, and it's incredibly, we may talk about these crises, but it's an incredibly exciting time at the same time, because there are these fundamental aspects of in fact, even, and things change. We used to, I think it's fair to say, I don't know if Frank will agree, that 30 years ago, we generally talked about the universe, and we meant by that everything that exists. But now I think our version of the universe, the word universe, is different. It's everything that we could have once been in contact with or will ever be in contact with, and we realize that there may be other things beyond that. And so our ideas change, and that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, we've gradually been learning over the 20th century, and with a few really dramatic episodes, that what we perceive as reality is actually only a very small portion of what's out there. And we're getting, well, we may have to still fully absorb the impact of that message. But part of the art of theoretical physics is to decide the questions you can address successfully.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some that are out of reach for a while, or maybe for a very long while. But I think there are enough that are within reach that will be gainfully employed for a while.
Mm. Can you?
It's going to be inciting.
Well, I mean, can you get particle colliders big enough to answer some of these questions? I mean,
I'm hoping the LHC is big enough. Yeah, I mean will tell us, for instance, whether some very interesting hypotheses about supersymmetry, unification, and the dark matter are correct or not.
And that's the optimistic. I mean, again, I'm going to try and take the optimistic. It could be. I worry in my bad days that you know the LHC won't address some of these issues. And then the question is, will the world? Because I don't think any country will build the next accelerator. It just costs too much money. But will the world have the will to say, you know what, these fundamental questions about why we're here and what the origin of the universe is and how the fundamental forces are put together is important enough to build another machine without knowing the answer? And so
Yes. It'll
be an interesting, of course, that's a political and social question. And and I hope that that your program and when we talk about the fascination of the universe will help encourage people to realize that these are interesting questions worth studying.
But right, it also should be said that accelerators are not the only way to go.
Ah.
There are exciting projects that could be mounted that are comparable to, or in some cases, much, much less in cost.
All right.
For instance,
Frank, hold on to that thought, because we have to take a break, and we'll come back and talk lots more about the new frontiers in physics with Frank Wilczek, Brian Schmidt, Lawrence Krauss. Our number is 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. We'll try to take some of your calls. Keep those thinking caps on. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato. We're talking this hour about physics. What do we still need to know? Can we get there? Are there stumbling blocks? What are the next big questions? With my guests, Lawrence Krauss, Foundation Professor, Director of the Origins Project at Arizona State University in Tempe. Brian Schmidt, winner of the 2011 Nobel Prize in Physics, Professor at the Australian National University in Canberra, Australia. Frank Wilczek, winner of the 2004 Nobel Prize in Physics, and the Herman Feshbach Professor of Physics at MIT. Our number 1-844-724-8255, or if you'd like to dial the other way, 844-SCI-TALK. When I rudely interrupt you, Frank Wilczek, he was telling
wasn't
us
so rude.
he was telling us about you don't have to have a giant particle collider to study some stuff. What are some other ways you might?
There are some very ingenious ideas to try to detect the dark matter directly, not by producing it at accelerators, but by seeing it floating out in space and finding its signatures and its interaction with matter, just as we detected the microwave background radiation. And there are very good ideas about detecting gravity waves in space. We're just at the point where we can hope in the near future to start detecting gravity waves on Earth. And we would open up fantastic vistas into the universe if we could put the facility in space to do that. There's proton decay. There's electric dipole moments. There are any number of very intriguing kinds of experiments that are just funding limited. And I think Brian has some ideas about cosmological frontiers, too. So,
you know, anything you can do on the Earth, you can probably do better out in space. You just got to find the place. And so when we go back and, for example, look to the time right after the Big Bang, the universe is doing all sorts of wonderful things. It's, You can dial up powers much, much beyond anything imaginable that is possible here on Earth. And the difficulty is getting information out of there. And that's where, for example, these gravity wave detectors, not so much ones on the ground, but ones in space, have the ability to look back where we can't see with, you know, the light that we're used to seeing with our own normal telescopes. And it is quite possible that we will get a deep, profound sense of that high-energy physics from gravity waves rather than from electromagnetic radiation. But just the way that galaxies are strewn around the world and our ability, for example, to measure fundamental constants on one side of the universe and on the other side of the universe, we can potentially infer that things in our universe are changing and that there really is a variation of what's going on in the universe well beyond our ability to see it. So there are many signatures we have the potential to find.
And I think one should add that physicists are entrepreneurs, and they go where the interesting possibilities are. And one of the great complementarities in particle physics is the fact that cosmology, the kind of work that Brian does, can tell us and has already told us key features of particle physics. So when one area has sort of an experimental dry spot, I think you see the experimentalists moving with their feet and trying to find the other areas, and that's going to continue to happen back and forth.
You all mentioned and referred to our universe. Is it a well-accepted tenet in physics now that there are many, many universes?
No, it's still controversial.
Well, but there is certainly a universe that extends beyond what we would call our horizon.
Yes.
We know that we can see out to a certain distance, and, well, I could not absolutely guarantee you that it doesn't suddenly end right beyond our ability to see it. I think we all accept that there is a lot more out there going on than what we can see.
I think it is fair to say that physicists' minds have been expanded in recent years. It used to be the default hypothesis, given overwhelming empirical evidence that the universe obeys the same laws everywhere and is composed of the same kind of materials, more or less uniformly distributed on large scales. I think people now have a broader vision of other possibilities that could be realized far, far away.
And we also realize that there, because of the discovery that Brian made, if that darn dark energy stays there, there'll be parts of the universe of what is the universe that we'll never see. We used to think if we waited long enough, we might see more and more. But in fact, if the universe is accelerating, the longer we wait, the less we'll see.
Before I go to the phones, but Brian, I've heard other scientists say, and Lawrence, you said, we're pretty well, everything fits. But people like you and Steven Weinberg have all said, the problem with the dark energy is not enough of it. There should be a lot more of it. It's just not fitting there either, is it?
And that's caused theorists to say, it's that there's so little of it that our universe seems unusual. It goes back to what I said before. It's caused people to say, maybe we're just a rare case.
I would say that that's the closest thing to a true crisis we have in physics.
But we have outstanding, everything fits, but we have some problems. We don't know what dark matter is. We don't know why neutrinos have mass.
Right.
And we don't know why the fluctuations of the vacuum don't seem to gravitate in the way we would expect by 50 or 60 orders of magnitude.
120 orders of magnitude, the worst prediction in all of physics.
Yes. So there are some major problems in what we know, even though most things fit extraordinarily well.
Yes. And these are more in the nature of puzzles, I would say, than contradictions. We can accommodate these observations without really perturbing the standard model in ways that it doesn't want to be perturbed, but it doesn't look pretty. These are aesthetic problems primarily.
So it's the devil is still in the details here.
Yes.
And that's great. That, as I say, we get excited because there's job security there.
All right, let's go to the phones. 844-724-8255. Let's go to New Orleans. Nick, hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and I got to say, I am so pleased and surprised that I got right in on this call immediately and that there are not just a million people waiting around the block to get in and ask questions about this topic today.
Go ahead.
So I'm afraid I'm going to be a little off topic here. I hope that's okay, because it's not strictly related to black holes or dark energy or dark matter, but I think it's related enough to it that I would like to ask you the question. So I can go off topic a little bit?
Go for it.
So my understanding of, and I think it's a correct understanding, of the general theory of relativity is that through some nuance in the calculation or some application of the theory, that the possibility of time travel, specifically time travel into the past, is possible under that theory, at least from a theoretical perspective. So my question to you is whether or not what we're talking about today, this crisis in physics, debunks that theory, makes it more likely or less likely, or more specifically, whether this fantasy I have of one day being able to jump into a machine and stopping World War II or World War I from happening, whether that's just a pipe dream. So that's my question to you, and I'll hang up and listen to your comment, but thanks in advance for addressing it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well, it would be nice, but unfortunately, I think that his understanding of what the general theory of relativity and our current understanding of physics predicts is incorrect. There's no evidence whatsoever that, or no encouragement for the idea that we could travel backwards in time. Quite the contrary.
But on the other hand, it's fair to say that it's not impossible. That we don't know. We haven't. There's no one. There's no theorem.
It's not
that
logically
you can,
impossible.
It's not logically.
Maybe it is actually.
Yeah,
I think it's certainly not suggested by.
It's not suggested, but I think it's fair to say we can't. We unfortunately haven't been able to rule out the possibility. The point is that in general relativity, space and time are tied together, and by matter, the relationships of matter, and so you could imagine mathematically writing down a kind of energy which would produce a universe that would have time travel. The big question is, could you ever produce that kind of energy? And most of the sensible answers are no, but I don't think we have an iron.
I
don't know. You disagree?
I have something to. Yeah, I have been visited by a 22nd century physics who assured me that time travel is impossible.
I will say that the good news is you can travel forward in time.
Yes. Yeah, we're doing it right now. I guess we should let the next. Yes.
We've learned many subtleties in time, and that time can flow at different rates to different observers, and things like that. But it's not true that the general theory of relativity encourages ideas about travel backwards in time.
Mm. Brian Schmidt is someone who has to actually go out and find the evidence for what these theoretical physicists are saying. Do you get frustrated saying, why sit around thinking these things? We can't find the answers. There's no experiment we can produce sometimes. This is just how many scientists will fit on the head of a pin, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, I'm very encouraging for people thinking about how they might actually measure their theories. When you talk to them and say, well, this theory will never be testable, then I'm, to my mind, it becomes more in the realm of metaphysics.
Yeah.
And the goal has to be to test it. Now, I'm also cognizant of the fact that sometimes you have to develop your ideas before you can get them to that place. But the goal has to be testing. And when people talk about something and they don't care about testing it, then my view is, then it's like, you might as well go to the seminary and work on it there.
I heartily agree with that.
Absolutely. It's an empirical science. But at the same time, we also beg the experimentalists to give us something to test sometimes. So we, and so it's really important that
we want them to make our job easy and they want us to make their job
that's
easy.
Right.
But
that's
in fact,
we
it's
work
a creative
better,
tension and a give and take.
That's, yeah, we work better when really we work together because I can tell you that when you go out and try to write a grant proposal and say, this is a fishing expedition, I want to measure something, we have no reason to believe anything is going to be found. I have never got one of those up yet.
But it is true that some of the great discoveries have been in particle physics, certainly have been the result of experiments that were looking for something entirely different.
Yeah, that's what I mean by the fact that we need experiment, because if we just relied on us theorists, we'd be up the wrong tree a lot of the time. And we need the experimentalists because the universe surprises us. And that's when it's most exciting, I think. And, again, to Brian, the discovery of dark energy is a great example. It just threw everyone for a loop.
So what's your answer to people when you say what practical value is any of this stuff? Because they ask that all the time.
Knowledge is always valuable, and you never can tell where knowledge is going to take you, but it doesn't take you backwards, it takes you forward. And so I always give the example in Australia, one of my colleagues was trying to look for Stephen Hawking's evaporating black holes. Uh-huh. He had to come up with techniques, he did, and he invented Wi-Fi, which is Australia's biggest invention. And who would have thought? So in that knowledge, there is value.
And it is true that whenever we do these incredibly complex experiments, we develop new technologies that will have spin-offs. But I don't think you should justify physics, this kind of physics, just for its spin-offs. Ultimately, it has value in itself. And, you know, I'm always amazed when people sort of say, what's the point of having these esoteric thoughts? But, you know, they don't ask what the point of a Mozart concerto is or a Picasso painting. This is what's part of being, of the joy and wonder of being human, asking questions, having new pictures of ourselves, and science changes our view of ourselves the same way that art and literature does. It's wonderful. The ideas are incredibly exciting, and that, it seems to me, in some sense, is what makes it worth getting up in the morning.
Let me just remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI. And we're back talking with Frank Wilczek, Brian Schmidt, Lawrence Krauss, who are, you're all going to be gathering together at Lawrence's place in Tempe.
We're already here, yeah.
And when scientists get together, are they friendly or they sneak false data past one another to confuse each other?
Depends on the scientists, yes. I think.
It's a wonderful community. I'm very proud and happy to be a member of this community.
There are.
You know, some cases where there are personal tensions, but for the most part, it's a very supportive and mutual admiration society.
We go out, we eat, drink, we're merry, we talk snide comments about our colleagues occasionally amongst those things. But it's kind of normal.
But at the same time, what there is, it's that respect for what people do and the fact that they're being honest. Mm-hmm. On the whole, that's the key thing, is that you tend to, there's a culture of trying to show the flaws as well as the good aspects. And I think, you know, if you think about it, the Large Hadron Collider is a great example. The fact that science, you know, was built by 10,000 PhD physicists from 100 different countries speaking dozens of languages with different cultures and religions, yet they work together. And that's, to me, one of the greatest things that science can do. We all do speak a common language in spite of our differences of nationality, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And of course there are tensions because, believe it or not, scientists are people.
And they disagree with each other. I mean, one of the things the public has hard to understand is that, gee, doesn't science, quote unquote, know this? What is science? As if it's a big book sitting on a desk someplace. This is what everything is science. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, and there are things we all agree with. We all agree that if you take a ball and let it go, it'll fall down. There are fundamental things. But what makes it interesting at the forefront is we're learning, and that means we do have big disagreements. And one of the things that we have these workshops here for is to bring people like my two colleagues here to actually get say, look, where are the real problems? Where are the real opportunities? And what's nonsense and what isn't? And focus our minds and be free and willing to disagree and talk openly.
I have about a minute left. What is going to be the next great discovery? What's going to pop out of a something?
Either axions or supersymmetry. I'm not sure which will come
first. I'm going to bet against both of them, but I do believe we'll figure out what dark matter is.
I'm going to say that if I knew what the next big thing was, I'd be doing it right now.
And is Stephen Hawking going to lose any more bets soon?
If he makes any.
If he makes any, yeah.
Is he that bad at this?
Well, as far as I know, he has a pretty unblemished record of losing his bets. But I may have missed a few. I don't know.
All right. Well, he creates a buzz, right?
When
he
says something. Yeah, he makes the bets.
He creates the buzz.
Yeah, and he makes the bets, and he gets people interested.
Gets
and
people
I think
talking.
You got to give him credit for that.
That's what we like.
Yeah, you like people to talk about your subject. And because it's
absolutely
not something.
Sure. He's a wonderful, he focuses a lot of people's attention on this subject, and one should give him credit for that.
And there's just a big, so much money out there to fund all the stuff that you guys do. So,
Well, we wish there were more.
Yeah, well, don't we all? Thank you, and good luck with your event this weekend, Lawrence.
Thanks a lot, Ira.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Brian Wilczek, winner of the 2004 Nobel Prize in Physics, the Hermann Feshbach Professor of Physics at MIT. Brian Schmidt, winner of the 2011 Nobel Prize in Physics, professor at the Australian National University in Canberra, and Lawrence Krauss, Foundation Professor and Director of the Origins Project at ASU in Tempe, where they're going to all be talking and meeting over this weekend at the Origins Project panel tomorrow night.